Despite fears of the coronavirus, the Florida primary is up and running this morning. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, voters are casting ballots with some trepidation across the state today. We'll take a look at how the balloting is going. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, the global pandemic is wreaking havoc on the markets. Some advice for you from a local retirement planning expert. And some tips on how to de-stress a little bit during these times. It's all ahead. But first this morning, despite fears of coronavirus, the polls are open on this primary election day in Florida. We're hearing that poll workers in some locations, anyway, are wearing masks and gloves and giving hand sanitizer to voters before and after they cast a ballot. Mike Bender runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, and he's on the line. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being with us. We should note that for the time being, all of the guests that we are booking on First Coast Connect and our statewide program, the Florida Roundup, will be appearing by phone so that we can practice social distancing ourselves. Give us a call meanwhile. Let us know your thoughts about Election Day. You know, Ohio canceled its election up in Ohio, although Illinois and Arizona are holding their primaries today along with Florida. Do you think that was the right move? Do you have any concerns about voting? Worried about catching a virus? It's 549-2937 to join us. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. You know, I'm looking at the tweets here about the Florida primary, and a lot of people are posting pictures of themselves with hand sanitizer after they voted.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, the one thing that's always important to keep in mind in Florida is we have so much voting that has already occurred prior to this morning. Just, they're in voting by mail, over 1.3 million ballots have already been cast, and that doesn't even count ballots that are still trickling in. Voting early in person, we've had over 600,000. We've had over 2 million people already cast ballots in Florida. So this isn't like everybody's showing up immediately today at 8 a.m.
Right. We're just hearing a trickle of voters at most polling locations. Now, what do you think about the fact that at least one state, Ohio, decided to move its primary to June out of concern for spreading coronavirus?
Obviously, I'm not the governor of Ohio, and that's his call to make. I think DeSantis probably made the right call here in going ahead with the election. There's always something that we don't really necessarily think a lot about here in America because we've had relative peace and stability. The role that democracy with a little d plays in our society and how important that is, and the fundamental tenet of that is elections. And I understand there are certain circumstances where they might need to be moved, and this is only a primary. But the one thing that it does cause is this provides precedent for doing this potentially in November, even maybe for nefarious reasons.
Right. Does it set a dangerous precedent? You know, we saw Governor DeSantis yesterday say, we don't want to panic here in Florida. People went out and voted even during the Civil War. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, I don't know if this is quite the Civil War, and we've had elections during all sorts of difficult circumstances prior to this today. I am supportive of DeSantis' decision to continue on with this election, mostly because of how this primary will play out. This is a primary election. There's one candidate on the ballot. Well, there's one race to vote on each of the ballots if you're a Democrat or a Republican. It's not like you're going to be standing in line for an hour and a half. It's not like you're going to be standing in the voting booth for an hour filling out a complex multi-page ballot. You walk in, you grab your ballot, you fill in a dot, and then you leave. And it's not like we're getting a rush of people showing up. Mm-hmm. Now, am I going to sit here and say that absolutely nobody is going to transmit coronavirus today? No, but just the risk is very low.
Let me ask you this as well. A coalition of racial justice groups have filed a lawsuit over canceled and consolidated polling places, including in dozens of assisted living facilities. They're saying that the way the state has responded to the threat of COVID-19 has limited their access to the ballot.
Right. And I certainly think there's some merit to that. One of the benefits to having, and Duval has had some precincts in those places as well. One of the benefits is elderly folks that may not have the mobility and the access to drive a mile or to walk 2 miles to a polling station can just go downstairs into their facility and vote. The problem is those folks are the most vulnerable. Those are the people that are dying.
Yeah.
And so it is completely reasonable to me to not bring in, even if it's 10 or 20 or 100 people from the outside that may not even be showing symptoms, but maybe carriers, that's a reasonable decision to me. And I understand that it might be a little bit of an inconvenience and it might hinder some folks' abilities to vote under these circumstances. That makes perfect sense.
It's 549-2937. Here on the show today, as we speak with Mike Bender. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Are you planning to vote today? Are you concerned about going out to vote as we all practice social distancing, as coronavirus fears have really gripped this country? We're all being advised to avoid groups of 10 or more people right now. We'll go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937. Lots of emails and tweets that I'll get to as well. Let me ask you this as well, Mike. You ran a recent poll showing that Joe Biden is expected to win Florida going away. Will the dampened turnout that we might see today affect what you had predicted, do you think? Biden predicted to get 60 to 70% of the vote here today in Florida.
Yeah, we had Biden win by about 44%, so more than 40. We expected a blowout based on our polling. And the short answer is I don't think that the margins are going to change based on dampened turnout. And let's be clear, I fully expect turnout to be much lower today than it was in the same primary 4 years ago in 2016 when you also had essentially a head-to-head race. The reasons why are if you look at how the demographics split for support for Bernie Sanders versus Joe Biden, the only real big difference is amongst age groups. Younger folks are much more supportive of Bernie Sanders. Older folks are much more supportive of Joe Biden. Now, traditionally, younger folks are much less likely to turn out and vote in these elections. Even though in this circumstance, they might be less affected by coronavirus, overall, they're less likely to turn out. Conversely, older folks are much more supportive of Biden and more likely to turn out, even though they might be more impacted by this and have a greater incentive not to show up today. I think this dampened turnout is going to be a wash across both the younger voters and the older voters because the younger voters are more likely to be impacted by hurdles to voting.
So you think the older cohort will turn out in about the numbers you expected, even in spite of what we're dealing with in terms of public health?
I think they'll turn out a little bit less, but I think the younger folks will as well. So I think they'll cancel each other out.
It's a wash then. Okay. And, you know, Florida has seen a really unusual campaign because of this pandemic. No more door knocking, no more rallies. No more in-person meetings between campaign operatives. This is a really different way of campaigning. No glad handing. I mean, that's the lifeblood of politics, right? And now neither Joe Biden nor Bernie Sanders can get out there and shake hands and slap backs. No get out the vote operation. No election day parties. Everything's
right,
being done online.
And all of that's going to lead to lower turnout. And let's be clear, right? You turn on the TV, they're not talking about Election Day. You turn on the radio, we're probably the only ones talking about Election Day. Everything is the coronavirus. So less media attention, less campaigning activities, all that's going to lead down to lower turnout. Now, if this race were deadlocked and really tight, these impacts might matter. But because the demographics were never great for Bernie Sanders in Florida anyway. He got smoked here in 2016. This wasn't a good state for him to begin with. Now that the Democratic Party, in a lot of ways, has coalesced behind Biden, it's even worse for him. So this particular election in this particular state isn't going to be impacted. Now, if this were November, this would be a completely different circumstance.
Let me also touch on the fact that you said it's all coronavirus news all the time now.
Of
How do you see this pandemic affecting the general election once we get through these primaries? And let's assume it's Joe Biden who carries the mantle for the Democrats going into November against President Trump. How is this virus affecting the lay of the land in this general election contest?
All right. So assuming that by November, the virus has abated to the point where we are not under quarantine, we are allowed to relatively get back to life as normal. If we make that assumption, and I think that's reasonable based on a lot of what the epidemiologists have been discussing, the real problem is going to be the state of the economy. And yes, the Dow and other types of markets have decreased and they've really plummeted in the last month. But the real problem is what happens to all of the economic impacts that come out from this, the lost jobs, the unemployment, the impending potential recession. All of these things are what Donald Trump has been hanging his hat on for the last 3 years. And for him to point at stock markets that are at or maybe even below where he took office, or unemployment at double digits, all those things are very bad for an incumbent president.
How does Donald Trump message his way through this? Where does he go to try to shore up his support among the Republican base and keep people in his column that might be inclined to cast a ballot for Biden if the economy really starts to waver?
I think the real thing that you're going to see out of Trump, and again, a lot of this is dependent on the ground realities that we don't exactly know what are going to be the case several months from now. But you're going to see a negative, nasty campaign. And if you can't point to your accomplishments and say, hey, look at all the great work I've done, you have to point to the opponent and say, this opponent is so bad and so terrible that you can't vote for them, much like you saw in 2016. And that is the type of campaign we're probably staring at.
And this election for the Democrats anyway, of course, they want to cast this as a referendum on Donald Trump. If Bernie Sanders had been successful in winning the nomination, which it's looking now as though he won't be, it would have been a referendum on socialism. So Joe Biden becoming the standard bearer for the Democrats, that's the election fight the Democrats want, isn't it?
Certainly the moderate Democrats and the mainstream Democrats, that's the election that they wanted. Now, the far left wing of the Democratic Party, the real progressive wing, they wanted something very different in Bernie Sanders. And they think their policies are winning policies. And to be honest, the vast majority of Democrats would have voted for either of them. The question is, does the moderates that maybe Joe Biden is able to pull into his camp, maybe some of those people that held their nose and voted for Trump in 2016, or maybe some moderate Republicans that have looked at Trump and didn't like the way he acts on Twitter and weren't a fan of how he's conducted himself in office, but went along with him because he was a Republican, if they looked across the screen and saw a Bernie Sanders, that's a very different image than a very moderate Joe Biden. That will enable them, Joe Biden at least, to pull some of those moderates and independents. Now the question is, how hard does Bernie campaign and how much of an effort does Joe Biden make to make sure that the far left wing of his party stays mobilized and shows up to vote? That's the unanswered question.
Lots of comments on our Facebook page as we speak with UNF pollster Mike Binder about today's Florida primary election. Matt writes, this is all a thinly veiled boomer puppet show. Shame on the DNC for repeatedly moving the goalposts to shut out a younger and vital woman of color, Tulsi Gabbard. She is still in the race, polling at about 1%. Why is Tulsi Gabbard staying in at this point, Mike?
I'm not sure that there's any cost for her to get out. She's not generating a lot of media attention. She's not gathering a lot of support, so she's not really directly impacting the race. But if you look at a lot of her policies, she tends to be much more conservative on a lot of issues. And I think the Democrats have really, I mean, the Democratic, how they determined the debates and the media attention drew a lot of fire from a lot of different quarters. And certainly relying on polling results and things of that nature and donations, the parties are not used to having 25 people run for office, not for president.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they had the right mix for determining who actually got on those debate stages. But at this point, they've made their decision that it's down to Joe and Bernie.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. A recent UNF poll shows Joe Biden handily winning today's Florida primary election. People are going out to vote despite concerns about coronavirus. Let us know your thoughts about this at 549-2937. We are still taking calls throughout this public health emergency. Emily writes on our Facebook page, I just voted at the Mandarin Senior Center. I'm so thankful to those volunteers who worked today. I was the only voter in there, but someone else was coming in as I was leaving. You know, Mike, most of these poll volunteers tend to be senior citizens, so we really do owe them a bit of thanks for coming out today and manning these polling places.
Today and every day. Let's be clear, this is not, they get a little bit of money. It's not a lot of money. And this is not a fun day. It's a long day. There's a lot of prep that goes into it, and they're 12-hour plus days. And, this is something that a lot of people do. And, yes, a lot of them are older, retired folks that have the ability to spend an entire day at the polling place. But the work they do is absolutely underappreciated. And I've been voting since I moved to Duval in 2011, and the experience that I've always had, I typically vote in person. I now typically vote early, has always been very positive, and they've always had smiles on their faces. And what they do is vital to democracy.
Now, whether you live in Duval or St. John's or Clay or Nassau counties, if you're planning on voting today, go to your supervisor of elections website. For example, if you go to DuvalElections.com, you will see a notice of the changes that have been made in terms of where polling places and precincts are located because of concerns of coronavirus. This is a real inconvenience for some people. But if you're confused about where you need to go to vote and you can't find your typical polling place, just visit your supervisor of elections website. Lots of tweets here for you, Mike Binder. Here's one from Chris. We should delay the primary and use lessons learned through the delay to implement best practices for the general. We shouldn't risk the health and safety of our state and city because of a date that was arbitrarily picked for no specific reason. We talked a little bit earlier about Ohio Governor Mike DeWine saying he just thinks it's too dangerous to let Ohioans vote today and that he's calling for the election to be moved to the summer. A century ago, the 1918 flu pandemic, there were a lot of lessons learned from that. And one case study I read showed the difference between two major cities. In Philadelphia, Mike, the mayor there let everyone keep partying, hanging out in clubs and restaurants and bars. There was a big parade there. People said they should cancel it. He refused. That was compared to the city of St. Louis, where the mayor shut everything down and people were very angry at him for doing that. But then after the pandemic had passed, Philadelphia just got slaughtered. There were many, many thousands more deaths in Philadelphia than in a city that was more aggressive in taking precautions like St. Louis. And the reason I'm telling this story is to say that if in the end we see that a state like Ohio had far fewer deaths or serious illness than a state like Florida, which isn't responding quite as aggressively, will a guy like Mike DeWine look really good in hindsight for taking these draconian measures and shutting down an election?
I think there's a couple differences here between those two examples. The first is Florida, the vast majority of our votes have already been cast. So the people, much like the person that wrote in that said, hey, I voted and there was nobody in there, you're not going to be showing up at a polling place with 100 people there. So that's one aspect. You're going to be many fewer people, so you're not going to be having those crowded bars and clubs. Ohio is a couple days ahead of Florida in shutting down bars and restaurants. But I think now most of the country is on board after the federal recommendations that came out just yesterday. So I don't know that this is the same as just letting life go on and having a St. Patrick's Day parade and having gatherings of tens of thousands of people and all those types of things. So I don't know that I would equate the two. And there are a lot of other differences between Florida and Ohio, certainly on the election stage.
We're also being told that there are some voting sites open at local libraries. Again, check our website or check your supervisor of elections website if you need more clarification. Here's a tweet from Jimmy. We can delay a primary, but we can't do it with no notice. We cannot delay the November 3rd election, so we better figure it out. A few more tweets for you. I believe, says Terry, that this is irresponsible. It puts everyone at risk. Let's go to a call now. It's CJ in Mandarin. CJ, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Let me first just say, Melissa, thank you so much for being such a cool, calm, and collected voice in the face of panic. And,
well, thank you.
I just want to thank you. We're very lucky to have you. And
you're not around me all the time, but I have my moments. But thank you, CJ.
You're welcome. And I just wanted to ask the professor what he thinks of some political fixes that we can do to help shore up both the economy and the American worker who's been badly hit by this crisis in the form of a cash payment. I know that just yesterday Mitt Romney came out in support of a $1,000 one-time stimulus to get through this. And I know that others that have been opposed to a universal basic income, like even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, now have changed their mind. And I just wanted to ask the professor what he thinks of the rise of universal basic income that had been in obscurity as of, about a year ago. Now it's gained more support, and especially now that this crisis has hit, people are looking at this idea and say, wait a second, this is a way to get money in people's hands. People will spend the money, it'll stimulate the economy, and it can potentially bring back the stock market, or at least be, a fix for sure all the people affected by the business, the restaurant and retail closures and limits of hours and the drop in business. So I'll take my answer off here, and thank you so much.
Thank you, CJ. Yeah, it was remarkable to see that tweet from Mitt Romney yesterday, Mike, saying every American adult should get a check right away for $1,000. The former presidential candidate Andrew Yang said, that's what I was advocating for.
He's been talking about that for a year, probably longer. No, that was Yang's position, and this was an issue that was really on the outskirts of the political discussion up until Andrew Yang made a push in the Democratic primary based on that issue and other things, but that was really his main calling card. Do I necessarily think that that's going to solve all of our problems? I absolutely don't. I think one thing that folks need to at least have in the back of their heads is the impact from this on the grand economy is not being felt today. It will be felt next month, the month after that, and the month after that. Because how do we handle large sums of people that are going to end up being unemployed? Listen, I don't know the answer if universal basic income or just a one-time check of $1,000 is going to fix this. And I would, even if that were to happen, I would say in all likelihood, probably not. If you think about, how much $1,000 actually is, that might get you through a month.
Right.
Might cover rent. Then what? Because guess what? Your job might not be back next month. And when it comes back, you might not be the one to get it. You and your five people that haven't been working in a small business, maybe only two come back. We are staring at a really serious economic problem that's impacting the entire world. So it's not like we're just taking a pause and then 2 weeks from now, 15 days from now, we're going to get back on the wheel and the rest of the world's going to be up and running. We're staring at something really serious here. And I don't have an answer. I wish I did. I'd be making a lot more money and certainly helping a lot more people. But I don't have an answer for it.
Yeah. You know, my dad texted me last night from Ohio where they're not sure whether they're going to vote today. And he said, you and all your coworkers, just take care of each other because this is going to be the biggest story you've probably all covered since 9/11. And I think he's right. I think it's that big. and it's going to get bigger. Let's go.
Yeah,
to,
and I think the economic impacts are going to be far greater than 09 as well.
Yeah. Let's go to Joe in Murray Hill. Hi, Joe. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for your call.
So my concern is that Jacksonville hasn't amended their ordinances to be in line with the CDC guidelines, and I'm specifically referring to the service industry where I work and a lot of people I know work.
And you're talking about the 10-person limit. Like, do you think that if they were to close where you work, you wouldn't be getting any hours, right? I mean, are you worried about that?
Of course I'm worried about that, but I'm also worried about being part of the problem and being surrounded by people who don't take this seriously and will go out and be sick anyway. Restaurants are hotbeds of transmission. But the 50 people, I called the city today just now, and they said that the last thing they heard of was the 50-people limit. So that's concerning to me because it's now 10, but the last thing from the city's mouth is 50. So
yeah,
there's some kind of disconnect here.
They do need to catch up to that, Joe. You know, I went and got takeout yesterday at a Panera Bread, and they had placed signs on every other table saying, don't sit at this table, so that they could space the customers out. They gave me a takeout cup in a paper bag. They had removed the plastic drink cups from anyone being able to grab them. So they had done some things to try to limit the spread of pathogens. But you're right. Today, it's a new day. Today, how is a restaurant going to operate if the guideline is 10 people?
Exactly.
And, yeah, exactly right. And Joe, if you don't mind, stay on the line so we can take your phone number. Maybe we can interview you for a story later today as we cover restaurant and hospitality workers and everything they're dealing with, which is considerable. Joe, hang on. I'm going to ask our phone volunteer to take your number. All right? Putting you on hold.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mike, let's talk about the politics of this.
Sure.
The restaurant and hospitality industry is going to get hammered over this. And how will Congress and the president and Joe Biden, if he is the nominee, how the measures that they're already recommending to help this sector, that is already becoming a political fight?
Yeah, it's coming a political fight. Coming from my perspective, I spent 10 years in the service industry. It got me through high school and college. So I am very sympathetic to that circumstance. And this industry is going to get slaughtered. You can't close, restaurants work on small margins, and you can't expect to close down for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and expect to pick up and go like nothing has changed or nothing has happened. Because guess what? Your rent is still due on your space every month on your lease. And there are going to be a ton of restaurants that fail because of this. And there's no way to fix that. I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know that either of the presumptive presidential candidates necessarily know what that answer is either.
Right. How much stimulus, how many loans can they distribute? I mean, there are there've got to be millions of restaurants in America. It's mind-boggling to think about.
Right. If you just think about, drive down any street, any decent street with some sense of commercial, and everything from your Chick-fil-A's to your mom-and-pop sandwich shops to your more formal restaurants. Everything in between, there is tons of them. Even your little juice shops and coffee shops, all of them are going to get tremendously hurt by this. If you're a business owner, how do you handle this? You know, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer for them. And a lot of people don't either.
I've noticed some grassroots efforts on social media of people just really encouraging everyone to patronize their neighborhood eateries with takeout, order as much takeout as they can. Whether that will save some of these establishments, I just don't know.
I think it may on the margins help a little bit, but most restaurants outside of say your McDonald's or Chick-fil-A's are a lot of them are sit down, go out to eat restaurants, and you don't necessarily think of them as takeout. You certainly don't. They're not designed to operate that way. They don't function that way. It's going to be very difficult.
Let me take one more call. It's Sergio in Orange Park. Sergio, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks.
First, I want to say I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Every morning, and it's very it's very good to see that you guys are touching all the bases. But my question is, and to your correspondent there, is how New York is doing the mobile sites to test the coronavirus. Is there anything on the political side or medical side here in Florida they're going that route or trying to do something of that sort?
Yeah, sure. President Trump and his administration have been hammered for not moving aggressively enough on testing, Mike. You know, we heard from Mayor Curry yesterday that they're setting up testing at TIAA Bank Field within a few days, and there should be other sites in our area soon. But that is also a huge political liability for the president right now.
Certainly, and this is one of those things where this isn't necessarily a Democrat or Republican problem. This is a federal government, state government, local government communication problem, aside from the science of it. We can talk about both of them. But and you see this. You see this with the Curry administration, how they're struggling to get up-to-date, timely information from the Florida Department of Health. You see the Florida Department of Health struggling to get timely information from the feds. You see the Florida Department of Health struggling to properly explain what the current guidelines from the feds are, because this doesn't change every couple of weeks or every few days. This changes hour by hour. And the large-scale bureaucratic agencies like governments aren't designed to change and shift so quickly. And that doesn't even include the science of the fact that this is a virus that we have never seen before, that there are not a bazillion flu shots laying around just waiting to get distributed. These things had to be created. Mm-hmm. And then not only do they have to be created, they have to get distributed. All that stuff takes time, and we just don't have enough, and we were not aggressive enough on the front end to prepare for it.
And to Sergio's question, it's our understanding that there will be mobile testing sites in the area within a few days, particularly at TIAA Bank Field in downtown Jacksonville. Go to the health department's website for more information about how you can get tested if you think you have symptoms, because not everyone who wants a test is going to be able to get one, at least for right now. Also, go to wjct.org/coronavirus for all of the latest information that we're getting from health officials. And check your supervisor of elections website today if you're planning to go vote, and just make sure your polling place is up and running. And a huge thanks to Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. I think he's the state's top pollster. And we are very lucky we are so lucky to have him here in Jacksonville. Mike, always good to get your thoughts. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. And to your listeners, just be careful and take reasonable measures. There's no need to make this worse than it has to be.
That's right. Thanks, Mike. And up next, a look at how coronavirus concerns are impacting the stock markets and your retirement portfolio. We'll speak with Adam Wolf of Wolf Retirement Navigation next.
VyStar Credit Union, committed to helping its members understand their home loan options and make informed choices. VyStar, we never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vystarcu.org.
Hi, I'm Tom Hudson. Florida's presidential primary is March 17th.
I'm Melissa Ross. The Florida Roundup will have special coverage that night at 7 o'clock as most of the state's polls close.
Our hour-long program will have reports and analysis from across the state, along with your calls and tweets.
We want to hear about your experiences at the polls and which candidate you'd like to see face off with President Trump in November.
So join us on the Florida Roundup.
Tuesday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the wild swings of the stock market in reaction to coronavirus have investors rattled. The impact on the markets took center stage again on Tuesday as the Dow plunged thousands of points, its worst ever point loss in history, nearly 3,000 points. Are you worried about your portfolio? You're not alone. We've got some advice right now. Adam Wolf is a CPA with Wolf Retirement Navigation, LLC, and he is on the phone. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
You know, I think everyone's looking at these numbers and just has that sinking feeling in the pit of their stomach. How are you advising your clients as we go through this stretch of market volatility?
Yeah, let's take a step back. If we look at this, you know, going back year to date, you know, the S&P 500, which is a good barometer of the overall health of the stock market, is down about 26%. You know, so that's a very large number. It's happened very, very quickly. 12% yesterday, the worst, you know, stock market loss in any daily, you know, number since 1987 with Black Monday. From a standpoint of, you know, the folks that we work with are people nearing and in retirement, which I think is a lot of your listener base, you know, going into retirement, knowing what your worst case is, not panicking now, not selling across the board now, but not being naive to know that within your portfolio, within your 401ks, your IRAs, there may be things in there that maybe might have a little bit too much risk. But let's take a step back. We also are at 11-year highs in the stock market since the bottom of March of 2009 with the last crisis that we had. This crisis is not man-made. This is more of a natural disaster type of crisis. We want to keep everybody safe first and foremost. And we need to do everything in our power as a government and as citizens to, you know, keep this stuff not propped up, but healthy. And it should be concentrating on the health of our concerned citizens first and foremost, and then market second.
Yeah. Apparently the market did open up 300 points this morning, so that's a little bit encouraging. Are you giving people advice for both the short term and the long term as they look at their portfolios?
Yes, correct. So, you know, we equate it, the stock market, to a roller coaster. It's been a bungee cord, you know, somebody jumping off a bungee here recently. On our end, what we're doing prior to retirement and in retirement for our folks is we know what our worst-case scenario is going forward to it. If you're sitting in your 401ks or IRAs now, most folks hold bonds. The average, you know, aggregate bond holding right now in the terms of a mutual fund is up, you know, between 3% and 4%. So not all is lost with these portfolios. And when we hear these numbers of 12% down, unless you're 100% just in the stock market, most of your portfolios aren't down. So you're going to be, you know, opening up your statements, looking online, and seeing these accounts down. This is the price, the risk that you're taking for being in the stock market and being on this, you know, this bungee cord jumping ride that we're currently on.
Now, younger investors and even middle-aged investors typically are advised by guys like you to take on more risk, to have a more aggressive approach. As you get closer and closer to retirement, you're advised to go more conservative. But what about people out there that have done that, but they're still seeing big losses just as they head into retirement? That's certainly really worrisome. It kind of calls back to mind the financial crash of 2008 when people saw their portfolios wiped out at that stage of life.
Sure. You know, if you're 65 years old, you know, which I work with many 65-year-olds, and, you know, you go back to 2000, you go back to 2001, 2002, 2008, within 20 years, we've gone through three of the worst, you know, market collapses that we've seen. And, you know, we make it through. So when you're younger, you have more time, and you know, the advice you give is, you know, continue to put your money away, continue to grow it, continue to compound it. But as we near retirement, within this retirement red zone of anywhere from 5 to 10 years away from retirement, and that first couple of years of retirement, knowing that risk, protecting as much as possible, but without giving up reasonable returns. Now, when the dust settles all this stuff that we're currently going through right now, we're going to have to look and reevaluate, you know, the overall
buying opportunity for folks who are able to do that, who have conserved, and not taken all the risks of the downside, which is most of the viewers. I doubt everyone was 100% in the stock market. So reallocation, shifting the monies from, the conservative holdings into more aggressive. It's not a recommendation across the board. Everybody's a little bit unique, but looking at opportunities on a tactical basis to make a little bit more, but still having some floors and protections in place for other types of investments to shore up and not take risks with everything.
Let's go to David in Atlantic Beach. David, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Well, good morning. I'd just like to commend Adam Walsh for his outstanding serenity during this kind of time of turmoil. I'm in Treasuries. I happen to be 70. But Adam has always provided good advice, and I think in this time of stress, the best thing to do is nothing, no matter where you are. Give the market a chance. And remember, we're still above where we were in 2016. So I think relax is the key word.
Okay, David, thanks for that. Adam, it can be hard to keep your cool when everybody is freaking out, but that's good advice, isn't it?
Yeah, David provided some good advice there to relax. This is not the end of the world. Free falling all the way to zero. It's never happened before. Studying some of these numbers going back, the worst month on record, even going back to the 20s that we've had as a country, the top 20, if you go 3 years later, seven of those years are negative, but the other 13 are positive, significantly more positive. You go out 5 years, the market's back up, and only five of those 20 periods have lower amounts. So I like David's advice and staying calm and going through this and taking the emotions out of it, but money is non-emotional at times.
Always good to have your insights. We'll continue to follow the markets here and keep listening to NPR as well. Adam Wolf is a CPA with Wolf Retirement Navigation, LLC. Adam, thank you so much.
Melissa, thank you.
Well, as we just discussed, people are stressed right now. How can you maintain calm in the time of coronavirus? Some advice about that and some deep breaths. We will be right back. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, our guest will be Hank Azaria, who's voiced many characters on The Simpsons, including Moe the Bartender, Chief Wiggum, and Dr. Nick. He'll tell us why he'll no longer be voicing Apu, and he'll talk about starring as a baseball announcer with a drinking problem on the IFC series Brockmire, which is about to begin its final season. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If there are six packets of your favorite kimchi ramen in stock, how many do you buy?
I bought three. If I take the last one of everything I think I need, someone else is just not going to have anything.
I'm Kai Rizdal. How shoppers are stocking up next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Two contenders, one nomination.
We are capable
of making sweeping change if we have the courage to do it.
With your help, we're creating a movement here, a movement powered by the backbone of the Democratic Party.
Well, the results from four more states give one candidate a distinct advantage. I'm Susan Davis. Join us for live special coverage of the Democratic primaries from NPR News.
This evening at 8 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Russia's trolls are back, once again sowing disinformation online. Only this time the attack isn't coming from some troll factory in St. Petersburg, but a suburban house not far from Accra, the capital of Ghana. I'm Todd Zwillick. That story and the latest on coronavirus, that's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, for many, the last few days have been pretty stressful, and the days ahead are sure to be as well. We want to help everyone take a breather and help manage stress. Yoga for Change founder Catherine Thomas is on the line with some insights for us. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me on.
Good to have you. Now, you and many others who offer fitness programs like the YMCA, for example, have temporarily put classes on hold or closed facilities. You had been planning on doing yoga classes at Jesse Paul DuPont Center. Do you hope to resume that in the next several weeks?
Well, there's no start date for that. I think we're all trying to figure out what's going on, in our own organization, and then let alone the community. We are looking very forward to starting those again as soon as the social distancing recommendations are, adjusted. But like many other yoga studios in town and many other Pilates studios, we are having a lot of resources online. Yoga for Change actually has a YouTube station that has content that we've been putting up on a weekly basis already. So for those parents who are now teachers homeschooling their kids, we do have classroom resources that we have had out for quite a while that are on our station now to help, give those mind breaks to parents and to kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Just go to YouTube and search Yoga for Change, yoga the number four, change, and take a virtual class. We're going to be seeing a lot more of that, Catherine, doing things virtually. And yoga is a really good way to stay fit and work on the mind-body connection, de-stress. It even boosts our immune system too, doesn't it?
Yes, and it also kind of just allows you to put whatever issue or problem you're currently facing. I've been listening to the show, so, if you see the stock market is not necessarily where you hoped it to be today, just kind of turning everything off, all the devices, keeping one device on, obviously, so you can do that virtual class, but then allowing yourself just to be still for 10 minutes actually will recharge you and allow you to have a fresh mind to deal with that problem or that issue, or to connect with, whoever you're in your social isolation house with, if you will.
Now, meditation, yoga, breathing exercises are all good for helping us lower our heart rate, our blood pressure, boosting immunity. Right now, we're excited because you actually have a breathing exercise to teach us. Can you share it with us?
Yes, this is something I do a lot of times during my own personal, my personal practice, but also just off my yoga mat. Going into a stressful environment or even leaving a stressful environment, reminding myself that whatever I did during that time period was enough. So what I'm going to do is I'm currently sitting down. So I invite people, if you're able to sit down and then just to take your thumb to your index finger for the count of one, and then your thumb to your third finger for the count of two, and the thumb to the fourth finger for the count of three, and the thumb to the pinky finger for the count of four. So we're going to inhale for 4 seconds in. Just hold for just a couple seconds, maybe one or two, and then exhale for a count of four. And what that is doing is it's engaging the parasympathetic nervous system as opposed to sympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic is the fight, flight, or freeze response. So when we're feeling anxious or anxiety, we want to get into that rest, renew response. So we'll just do it just a couple times. I recommend doing the cycle 4 times or more. So just take a normal breath in.
Mm-hmm. And breathing in.
Normal breath out. Good. Mm-hmm. Breathing out. And then you're going to inhale for 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. Exhale for 1, 2, 3, 4, hold.
And do that
inhale
four times.
For one. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And then just keep going, inhaling in for four, holding, and then exhaling for four. And then as you move your finger from each, your thumb from each finger to the next, you can maybe even add in an I, you know, like a little mantra that you say to yourself, I am strong enough. I am healthy enough. I am powerful enough, or whatever makes you feel really, really confident in your own skin. And so that's what we teach to our students, and I just wanted to share that with, you know, the community and also you, Melissa, just to remind everybody that we are doing, everyone's doing the best they can right now, and we can really come together as a community and really support each other, but also making sure we're taking time for ourselves.
That is just a genius breathing exercise. I am immediately going to adopt that into my daily routine. You feel calmer the minute you do it. And so, Catherine, we want to help you. Yoga for Change is a nonprofit. And like every other business out there, you are going to have to navigate this. How can people support you in addition to uploading your videos and streaming your classes online?
Well, subscribing to our YouTube station is a really great way that eventually once we hit our numbers for subscribers, we need 1,000, we can actually start getting small monetary donations through advertising. So that's huge. Subscribing to our YouTube station is huge. Taking the classes is great. If people have extra income, maybe possibly donating if possible, but really sharing the YouTube station with your own network, even that, you know, just the click and share on your social network, Facebook or whatever, would really also help because we want right now to support the community because as we support the community, we believe abundance brings abundance. So if we can help you, you know, be calmer eventually when we're all out through whatever, you know, whatever this end date will be, we can come together and maybe do an event, for a larger event for the community, which would raise donation funds. But right now we're really just trying to focus on how can we support Melissa Ross? How can we support WJCP? How can we support other nonprofit organizations who are doing this work?
And support Yoga for Change, subscribe to their YouTube channel. If you just do that alone, you will help them in innumerable ways. Thank you so much, Catherine Thomas, founder of Yoga for Change. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. And make sure to tune in tonight at 7 p.m. for the Florida Roundup. It'll be our live statewide look at the Florida primary as voters head to the polls today. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We will connect with you tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.